this week's episode, The Good Shiz, Take Two, Tom Hill. Tom co-runs the Bookhouse Studios in South East London, working predominantly as a producer, recording and mix engineer, and has racked up an incredibly diverse range of clients over the last decade. From laid-back acoustic singer-songwriters who need support with building their tracks from the ground up, right through to hardcore metal, punk and prog rock bands. I happen to know Tom personally. He's so easy to work with, and he's got a manner about him that makes you feel completely at ease. When Tom's not in the studio working with other artists, he's the predominant writer, guitarist, and one third of a band called Muttering. If you don't know who they are, I would highly recommend giving them a listen. But for now, here's my conversation with Tom Hill. Hey, Tommy, nice to see you, man.
Hey.
Yeah, this is always that part of the beginning of the conversation. We pretend we haven't done a little sound check already.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Thanks so much for doing this and for sort of agreeing to have this chat. We haven't spoken too much about the podcast and sort of what it all is, and I'll be sure to fill you in. But yeah, just wanted to start off by saying thanks so much.
Happy to.
Great. For those of you who sort of want a little bit of background, Tom is one of two producers who work out of the Bookhouse Studios in sort of Peckham, Bermondsey. Tom and I have done a little bit of work together over the course of the last couple of years, but we've never really gotten into any nitty-gritty conversations about just sort of how it all began for you. I just sort of wanted to get your view on your sort of world of music and what it means for you, and if we could kick things off just by starting with where everything started for you musically, you know, talk us through your background and when it started and where it started. And
I had one of those upbringings where neither of my parents are musicians, but they're both big music fans, possibly more so my dad than my mum. I think for my mum it was always kind of like music's a social thing, and for my dad it was a little bit of both. But he grew up in the, you know, he's like 60 something, and he grew up listening to like everything and anything that he could get his hands on in like the 70s, bearing in mind obviously no internet, and you know, buying records being, you know, fairly expensive for a school child. So I think he kind of grew up swapping records with all of his friends at school, and it's not really that he was in one scene, it was that he just kind of anything that kind of caught his ear he would listen to. So it was like T-Rex and like Thin Lizzy and Black Sabbath and The Jam, and kind of like any guitar music really. I think he kind of listened to other stuff as well, but that's kind of their background, is that they don't play any instruments. I was brought up in their house, only child, just with like music on all the time. And whenever I was given an opportunity to try pursuing music, they were always like, yeah, go for it, I'm happy to do it. So basically, in junior school, I kind of had two introductions to music, one of which was less successful than the other. So in junior school, one of the new teachers that sort of joined partway through when I was there for like 3 years that I was there, she was like a singer-songwriter, and she kind of brought in an acoustic guitar and would play to her class. But then she kind of started doing lunchtime guitar lessons once a week, so it would just be like a huge group of kids, like 10-20 kids, and she'd just be showing you like, this is a G chord. So I did that, and then I basically just found it incredibly hard, you know, I'm talking like age 8 or 9 or something. And my parents bought me a little 3/4 size acoustic guitar, so I started learning, but then kind of packed it in and was like, no, I can't do this, I'm not any good. And then almost basically the same thing happened. It was like when I then went to secondary school, they present you with all of the things, here's your new school, here's all the stuff that we offer, and guitar lessons was one of them. So I don't think it was like straight away, I think it was maybe like halfway through the first year of secondary school, so when I was like 11, kind of did the same thing again. I was like, mom, dad, please, can I have another guitar? So they bought me like a little, I can't remember what it was, I had something else, I had like a fake Les Paul, and then like weirdly the tiniest little part on it, the nut, broke. And like now I know that would be like it cost a few quid to fix. They did what like any parent with no musical knowledge does, and just take it back to the shop and go like, this guitar is broken. Can we have another one? And they were like, well, we don't have that one in stock, so do you have to choose another one? So I ended up with like a Squire Strat.
Cool.
And then from there, I don't know what was different about the second time around compared to the first time around. It probably actually just that my guitar teacher was very, very accommodating, and would just teach you whatever you wanted to learn. He wasn't like, we're going to learn this song today, and
Yeah.
that's, you know, he was just like, what do you want to learn? And I was like, anything easy. Yeah, and that's kind of it. And then from there, I just kind of had this, you know, I was just obsessed from that point. And also, I had started finding other music for myself through my next door neighbor's older brother. So, like, I would hang out with my next door neighbor. He was like the same school year as me. I'd hang out with him every day after school. And he just had an older brother who was like 3, 4 years older. And when I was around his house, his older brother would always have like Kerrang and like MTV2 on. So, like, the rock TV channels. And yeah, so like from that, I found out about whatever. All the music that was big at the time, I'll say like Sum 41 and like Linkin Park and
Yeah, punky stuff.
just kind of all the kind of rock stuff that was just getting played on the telly all
Yeah.
the time. So that kind of like coincided with the year that was all. I was starting to listen to that. Like I got a few CDs of bands like that a year or two before then picking up guitar, and suddenly I had this guitar teacher who was like happy to teach me those bands, songs, and stuff like that. So
Yeah.
yeah, really long-winded answer is I got bought a guitar and then I gave up learning and then I got bought another guitar and I didn't give up that time. So,
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
I think we can quite quickly forget how hard it is at the beginning.
Super
Yeah, I remember trying to get my hands around sort of just even open chords, you know, C's and G's and things like that, and feeling really discombobulated by getting the shapes right all the time, and obviously the pressure's got to be right in order for it to get the right ring, and then you sort of get introduced to bar chords, and then you're like, oh, that's really hard.
I mean,
Yeah.
still to this day, like if I'm playing a song that's all bar chords, by the end of the song, my hand is cramping up.
Yeah.
Like I can't hack it. I'm just too used to playing open chords and like weird alternate shapes that I've found or have been introduced to over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still can't hack it.
Yeah, me too, actually. I'm glad you said that, because you know, the Bill Withers, just the two of us, it's like just sort of all seventh chords up and down. And yeah, by the end of that, if I haven't warmed up properly, and I say warmed up properly, making as though I sort of sit down and warm up every day, I genuinely don't. But if it's the first thing I play, you know, within a few minutes, it's that sort of little spongy part's like aching, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
What is, do you remember what the first thing you learnt to play was? I'm just sort of interested to hear sort of this from people around the world, and different
So
things.
honestly, I probably can't remember. I have really bad memory, but I can tell you that the first song that I learned the guitar solo for, so like the first song where I learned A, the chords, and then B, also all the lead parts, was Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix.
Ah, wow, yeah.
Super fun. I was probably like butchering the solo. I probably did a terrible job, but like, yeah, before that I was just learning songs that were like incredibly easy. I remember just like learning a whole ton of songs that were just power chords,
Yeah.
for, you know, whatever reason. I definitely remember learning Hash Pipe by Weezer, which is just like
Don't think I
dun,
know
dun, dun,
that.
dun. It's one, most of the song is just one riff. It's super easy. Yeah, I remember learning that. I think it was all, again, like my teacher was just so up for just teaching me
Yeah.
stuff I was interested in that I can't pinpoint it because we just did so many
Yeah.
songs. Yeah, I also had like Total Guitar magazine. I was like obsessed with that. I had that every month and I always had tabs. Yeah, and some songs were like super hard and I would
Yeah.
just ignore them, too much of a challenge. And then all the easy ones I would just learn them whether I like the song or not.
Yeah. So it
Yeah.
was mostly around learning songs, and sort of not really looking at similarities with progressions, and sort of your 1-4-5 and 2-3-6 and major and minor, and
Yeah, we did.
was that
We
something
did.
that came later, or
It was kind of the same time. We did a little bit of like 12-bar blues and stuff like that.
yeah.
And like understanding. Weirdly, I don't know why. We did a lot of like learning chord markings, like, you know, if it's capital letters, it's major, and if it's little, it's minor. And yeah, I learned all of that stuff really early on, but I just think I was just so uninterested in it
Yeah,
that I
yeah,
just switched to learning contemporary rock stuff that I was like
yeah,
super into.
yeah.
Yeah.
You got to be obsessed with a song, whatever it is that makes you pick up the guitar or sit down at the piano, whatever it is.
that's the way you've got to learn, if that's your learning style, and whatever sort of you're going to be most obsessed about trying to figure out how to play or what to play.
I don't know about you,
That's
but I give up on stuff really quick if I'm finding it hard and not enjoying it. If you're enjoying it and finding it hard, then it's fine. And if you're enjoying it and it's easy, it's fine. But the combination of it being very difficult and not enjoyable is just like, why am I wasting my life doing this?
Totally.
So
It's
yeah,
not, it's a,
thank
it's a, yeah, that's a common thing. That's, yeah. I think some
you.
people have that more, I don't know. I mean, I talk about this a lot just because of the work that I do. And with most of our students at the school being adults, it sort of says a lot about music education and there fundamentally being flaws and sort of very traditional and rigid forms of learning to play the piano, for example, you know, as a kid and being led by notation-based styles, it isn't sort of fun. It's not creative. It's not going to give you sort of any.
I think people just overlook the importance of music as well in like early education. Like I don't know what the curriculums are like now, but like certainly we were just presented with like, here's how you read a stave. And you're like, well, that's great, but probably 90% of the music that you hear on a day-to-day basis, like the people making it or at least the people writing it or whatever, don't read music. Like
No,
it is important, it's very important, but it's such a poor entry point.
Do you read now? And we'll get on to your sort of your more formal education, because I know you went to uni, but
Every good boy, all the rest of it. I can read. I can't sight read. I can't just like pick up a I can't pick up like sheet music and play along. I'm nowhere near good enough. But certainly at the studio that I used to work at before me and Ian started the Bookhouse, we would not regularly but like sometimes do recordings of string quartets or even like larger groups. And you would have like the either the composer or whoever, not, it wouldn't be the conductor, but just whoever was there would be stood there with sheet music and they'd be like, here's your copy, and they'd like hand it to you, and importantly follow along. I could always follow along and just be like mark stuff up with a pencil and like actually understand what's going on. And therefore if I'm like, oh okay, that was all great, however we need to go back to like bar 34, you know, I can follow along well enough to do have conversations like that, but I can't play along. Nowhere good enough.
And you've never felt limited.
I think the world that I live in is so, and I don't want to be disparaging to the types of musicians that I record, but virtuoso musicianship is not a concern of most of the music that I work on. And most of it is people just like hammering out some songs that they've written. And that is great to me. So I've kind of like never needed to like spot up on it. You know what I mean?
For sure. And when did you sort of find yourself getting into bands and playing with other people? Was that something that happened in high school or sort of a little bit later?
That's another a really good thing about my music teacher at secondary school. So like I said, when I first picked up guitar when at junior school, I just found it really hard. Didn't really get any, there's so many kids in the class, so no one was nailing it. But it was like two or three kids. You had like a half an hour lesson and it was like two or three kids in the class. And it was, you know, one on one would be better, but it was enough that you could kind of get this attention. But the guitar teacher, Dean Hallett, who still kind of works in like Hampshire Music Services and stuff, he was just on it from day one of getting you to like, oh, okay, well you play the rhythm part and then you play this lead part over the top, and kind of like getting you accustomed to doing that. And then it was a little bit less frequent that we would do stuff with like a whole band, but we did do that from like as early as possible. I remember there being gigs that they would put on in the school hall after school, and like parents would come down and watch, and it would be like you would do whatever you could do. So for example, the first time that happened, I just got up on stage and played all the chords to Wonderwall, you know. In fact, actually Wonderwall might be the first song that I learned.
It wasn't far off one of my first few,
Certainly in this country with Oasis being as big as they were,
They were
how
big
have you
in
not learned?
SA as well, actually, which is strange because that's how you know how big they really were, was because in South Africa we grew up with lots of American music. So like Live, Counting Crows, just mostly American stuff. But Blur and Oasis did pop through.
That's crazy. I often wonder the stuff like that. I listen to a couple of podcasts, music podcasts that are just, you know, American people talking to mostly American people, and the amount of UK music that they will ever mention is so minimal. I think it's like, you know, they'll maybe name drop the Smiths or like the Cure or stuff like that from occasion, but Oasis get mentioned all the time. I'm like, that's insane that they were as big as that. But
Let's not give Noel any more airtime.
Interesting characters.
And to be fair, that album with Wonderwall on it is pretty good. I mean, you can't deny it. And that early
No.
Blur stuff as well, I really do love, actually.
Have you had or seen that documentary about the Oasis? They're kind of like, I don't want to say rise and fall, but like, is it called Supersonic?
I have actually tried to watch it, but at the beginning, like Noel and Liam and there's just so much stinky attitude going on. I couldn't push past that. But maybe I should give it another crack.
I find it really interesting how, like, all I really took away from that is that when they were recording at, it's not Rockfield, is it? Or is it Rockfield? Yeah, Rockfield, the studio in the middle of nowhere in Wales. There, all that they really said about it was that they would just get done recording. They were recording, trying to record one song a day. That was their schedule. It wasn't like, you know, we do all the drums for the whole album, then we do all the bass for the whole album. It's just like, we just get in the room, play the song, then we'll do some overdubs, and we'll do the vocals, and then the song's done. They just said that they would race through as quickly as they could so that they could go to the pub. That was like their only aim, was just like go to the pub and get the beers in. So funny. Like, the amount of people that I record who would be happy and willing to like call it a day hours early just so they can go to the pub is like nil.
No, everyone
I guess
wants to
that's what
milk
happened.
that last minute.
Which is fair. Like, that's exactly what I'm like as well. Yes, so funny. Anyway, I can't remember but what we were talking about before we started talking about Oasis, but
We were just talking about getting into bands, and you were saying how your teacher used to just sort of put you into your various groups, and you'd sort of learn to jam together.
he would just throw you together. I had the first like band of doing original stuff that I had was just this kid from my school year who I wasn't really like close friends with, but he was like the only kid from my school year who played the drums. And I just came up with a load of riffs. Also just like learning that drop D tuning exists, and then you're like, oh, I can just play backup chords with one finger. Wrote a load of fairly crappy riffs. And we kind of like started a band, but we very, very briefly had this girl that I was dating for a very short time. Bearing in mind, when I say dating, this is when I was like 14 or 15, so like I'm dumb. But anyway, she was singing, but inevitably when we broke up and fell out, she then was no longer singing in the band anymore. But never had a bass player. It was just drums, guitar, and vocals. And I don't think I've got any evidence of that anywhere apart from maybe like a couple of photos of the three of us that's like, you know, taken on a crappy digital camera, probably on my parents' hard drive somewhere. But
That's cute. I'd love to see that. But I mean, now you can, I mean, everything. We live in such a digital world. I've got sort of my life on file or on record. I think I got my first iPhone or whatever it is in 2016, and so everything is in the cloud from then. But predating that, it's bad Facebook pictures and not really much evidence
You
of
can do the
things.
thing on Facebook where you log in and you just download all of your photos as a zip file. You know, you can do that. Yeah, I don't remember how to find it, but if you Google it, it comes up. Yeah, really interesting. I've got photos from when I was like 16, which is half my life ago. So it'd be good to do that at some point. It's just finding the time.
And then I guess I don't I guess that sort of takes us to mid to late teens. Like when did you start thinking about music as a career and as a sort of something that you wanted to sort of formally go and study? Because you and the, you where did you grow up? And it was is it Basingstoke or
That's right.
near
Yeah,
there or okay.
Basingstoke is for the most part just like a commuter town, really. It's kind of like halfway between London and the South Coast. You know, if you head towards Southampton, Portsmouth.
I actually know it, but
Cool.
I've been there a couple of times.
It's one of those towns where it has, if you name any form of like entertainment or you know whatever, it's got two cinemas, it's got like an ice rink, it's got all this stuff, and at the same time, there's kind of like nothing going on there. There was for a long time a venue. Well, there have been loads of venues that have gigs, and there probably still are. I don't visit there often enough to know really, but there was always a venue called The Sanctuary, which was, you know, shockingly bad, crappy PA, no fold back speakers. Most of the bands just played on the floor, but they had stuff on all the time, and it was run by a couple of guys who were just like local. I don't say local legends, but I guess local legends. They were just super nice, and they would just put on everything and anything. They put on a lot of good bands, they put on a lot of crap bands as well, but it meant that, you know, it was really easy to get going playing in bands when I was younger because there were just loads of opportunities to play gigs. But yeah, I kind of from when I was like starting to do these little bands when I was like probably like 13, 14, you then have to choose your GCSEs. So I don't know how aware you are of like all of the how it was all structured. It's all different now, but
I mean, I know enough about sort of GCSEs at 16 or 15 or whatever, and then A levels at sort of 17, 18 or something like that. So yeah,
That's
you had to choose your GCSEs, and music was one of them.
yeah, you had to choose what you were gonna kind of leave in the wayside and what you wanted to really push on and study. And I really wanted to do music. And out of my school year, so all my age group, there were 210 people in my year. It was like seven groups, 30 kids. Eight people chose to do music, or it might have even been less initially. And they were like, "This is not enough people. We're not going to run the music course." Yeah, they were just like, "We just can't, you know, whatever." And my mum, I was really like
Upset.
angry about it. I was like, what am I going to do? Like, this sucks." So my mum has always been the kind of person to like speak up and like stick her neck out and do whatever needs to be done, like voice a unpopular opinion. But she was like, she basically just wrote to them, being like, "You have to run it. I'm going to pull my kid out of school if you don't do it. Like, find another way to do it." I don't remember the whole process of what happened then, but the result was that we had one music lesson a week in place of your like weekly, I can't remember what it's called, the like social studies thing. The lesson where you like learn, the lesson where they like show you how to put a condom on a banana, the lesson where they tell you about like, don't take drugs, kids. Like, instead of that lesson, we went and did music. And then I also had one lesson after school. So on a Thursday, we had one extra lesson and we're there for an hour after everyone else. And yeah, we just kind of like did it in addition to all the other stuff that I was also doing. So it was like great for my mum for pushing and making that happen. So it was only about 10 kids in our class, but I did get to do it. So I think going out of my way to like do it in addition to all the other stuff kind of like reinforced to me that it was like, you know, I did want to do it. I did want to study it. And then I went and studied at a different college. So after school, went to Queen Mary's College, which was just the one that everyone went to in my town, and studied English media studies, music technology, and music performance. And yeah, after the first year, you have to ditch one thing, and I ditched media studies and carried on doing music. But yeah, I just remember like walking into the they had like a little recording studio. I think since I've left, they've actually got a much nicer recording studio now, and I'd like to visit it at some point. But yeah, they had like a crappy little recording studio. I just remember day one just being like, this is sick. Just being like, I don't really know what microphones are or what they do, or you know, but just like seeing this room with all this music equipment and stuff, and just being like, this is so fucking cool. And then yeah, just through college, I just, you know, it was immediately apparent that's just like what I enjoyed the most was doing that stuff. I just loved it. Our teacher was great. I think all of these things have just been reinforced that the music teachers that I had over the years were just great, really enthusiastic, really like flexible in like what they were teaching you, really just like down to earth. Yeah, and he'd worked in big London studios. I think his trajectory is that he'd worked in big London studios and then he'd like quit trying to pursue recording when he like met his wife and then got married and then just sort of moved teaching because it's easier to manage schedule wise. But yeah, he'd worked on like sessions with Madonna and stuff like that. He'd worked on like big stuff. I think as an assistant rather than as like a producer or whatever, you know. But like, yeah, he was like super knowledgeable and super enthusiastic and
It makes all the difference, doesn't it? I mean, to learn from someone who you feel wants to teach you, it makes it's everything actually. It can make or break someone's relationship with music ultimately.
100%. I don't know. Yeah, there were so many things that with hindsight I probably would have found fascinating, like history. But the two history teachers that I had over the course of when I was at school, one was unbelievably strict, and if you spoke or misbehaved or did anything or, you know, raise your hand to ask a question when it wasn't the correct time to raise your hand to ask a question, you get yelled at. And it was grueling, just like copying notes down, and it sucked. It was not interesting. And then the other one I had was the opposite. He was so laid back that like we hardly got through the syllabus. So yeah, stuff that I think I could have found really interesting, I didn't when the just sucked. And yeah, music, I was lucky.
Was there a sort of definitive time where you knew it was production rather than going to study sort of guitar more formally, or how did that happen quite organically, or did that?
I think it was organic, and it basically just came out of the fact that my in playing my instrument, guitar, I just really quickly became more interested in writing music than
Okay, yeah.
playing other people's music, and just my general awareness of careers that were available to music tech people and careers that were available to like music performance people is that basically the money is in playing other people's songs. Like, you can get paid loads of money for doing function gigs, and you can this, that, and the other, or teaching people and all this other stuff. But I was like, I don't really have, I just, I enjoy playing my own songs way more than I enjoy doing this other stuff. So I don't really know at what point it like that idea solidified in my mind, but I definitely found that the tech side of stuff is feels like enjoyable work,
Yeah.
whereas playing other songs was like unenjoyable work. So I just think it
Yeah.
just naturally made sense to me to like,
Yeah.
well, if I'm gonna do this for a
Yeah.
career, I'd rather do the tech stuff because
Yeah.
it's I enjoy it, whereas I hate playing loads of covers. So
Yeah. Yeah,
pretty much.
I think that's not for everyone. And I mean, obviously I've seen you in the studio at work and how you manage a studio session and just sort of how you engineer a session. And it's always so interesting for me to watch because the tech side of things has never been something that I am all that interested in. I mean, I can get a very basic demo together on Cubase or whatever it is, and even saying that is probably exaggerating a little bit. It takes me time, and it's something that I really want to do because I think being self-sufficient in being able to really map out songs is so important, because even though the idea might start with a guitar or with the piano or with whatever instrument it is that you play, like in order to actually get an actualized demo or version of that tune that you can sort of continue to work on is so important. And lots of singer-songwriters that I know who don't have sort of either the means or the ability, not the ability, I hate that word because it assumes you either have it or you don't, but just maybe the experience to be able to sort of sit down and record something themselves. Songs can often just fall by the wayside. You've got to go after getting that song fleshed out that much more with someone who can help you. So yeah, I think it's such an important part of being a songwriter is the more self-sufficient you can be. And obviously, from a production perspective, you're a ninja. And from a guitar perspective and a writing perspective as well, you can sort of put these ideas down in a very sort of
I think
ultimate
with the
production
tech
sort of
side of
way.
stuff, yeah, exactly. I think with the tech side of stuff, regardless of how simple or difficult, that's not really what I mean, complex you're doing, whether you're, for example, like one of the most complex things to record is a drum kit, because there's all these
Yeah.
different elements to it that are all so close together, and it's understanding how the microphones all work together and getting a balanced picture of it, and all this other stuff. There's loads of stuff to bear in mind. All that stuff, I think you just need to get to the point where you're not really thinking about it too much. So
Yeah.
even if it's like plugging a guitar into a DI input of your interface and just like making a demo in GarageBand or Cubase or Pro Tools, whatever it is, if you kind of just like have a little preset of your settings, whether it be like a digital preset or you just know, I just plug it and turn this up here, and like that's a good starting point. Like, yeah, I think it's just good to be able to get stuff to the point where you're not thinking about it at all. And
Yeah.
I try not to think, I try not to spend too much time thinking about these things with the techie stuff in sessions, because it's not interesting to anyone in the room. Like, absolutely no one cares at all, like what microphones you're using for the overheads. Like, no one cares. So it's the kind of thing that you just need to know the shortcuts of like, oh, if we're doing fast technical music, I probably want to use some like really bright overheads and
Yeah.
make up spot miking, all the cymbals set, all the details are captured. And if you're doing kind of like slow, big, fat, beefy stuff, then maybe you want the ribbons and all this other stuff. All these decisions are like, just experience will
Yeah.
get you there. I love all that stuff, but yeah, I think most people find it terminally boring. The only person that I ever speak to in depth about this stuff is Ian, who I share the studio with,
Yeah. Yeah.
because he's in a similar position where he never sees anyone who he gets to talk to about it with. So
Yeah.
we're both pretty insufferable.
Yeah, I guess that's it. You've recorded a plethora of different artists, genres over your sort of time as a producer, and different mics will call for different things, different environments will call for different things. Yeah, and as you say, it's only really through experience and by doing that you start to become more knowledgeable with these things and these options and these tools that you can reach for.
Yeah, for sure. It's just like equivalent, like trying to eat soup with a fork or something. You're like,
Yeah.
it's just not happening. And you just
No.
switch to something else, and you're like, okay, now everything's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. What about from a songwriting perspective? Because, you know, you are in, I know that you've been in a couple of bands. I know that you're in Muttering now, but I don't know if there's anything else that you're doing musically or any other projects that you're in musically.
So I've kind of been in loads of bands over the years, and
Yeah.
they've all been quite different. So the bands that I was in when I was like 16 was me writing a load of guitar parts and just kind of like gluing them all together, whether they really fit or not. I was just like, well, you know, that's the
Yeah.
song. And the music that I became obsessed with at the time when I was like 16, 17, 18 was this like very niche little genre called math rock, where it's like lots of odd time signatures and like traditionally like lots of like tapping and like silly whiddly guitar techniques and lots of like open tunings and stuff like this. So I kind of the band I did for all the time I was at uni was me and my friend Kurt, and then we had a couple of different bass players over the years. But yeah, we just kind of wrote music that challenged us to some extent. So like lots of weird time signatures and like jazzy chords and kind of still rock music, and we just wrote stuff that kind of worked for us at the time. And looking back at it, it's all like I think it's all kind of goofy and dumb. Like there's no nothing really flows, nothing really builds. It's just a string of ideas. And then I kind of like spent the next couple of years mainly playing in a hardcore band where it's just aggressive and loud and heavy, and yeah, there's like slightly more songwriting craft, but it's still kind of just a ton of riffs and a ton of ideas strung together. And that was more thoughtful about like, oh, if we do this and whatever, and then it will build, and then just kind of like making these points of impact that suddenly just like hit much harder. You know, it's not songwriting to the same extent of like structuring the music around the lyrics or kind of like making these hooks, or you know, it's a very different type of songwriting. So it's kind of new for me now that I'm actually in a band where I'm writing most of the music for a singer who's kind of like you know, spends a lot of time working on his lyrics and spends a lot of time working on melodies and thinking of harmonies and you know, all this other stuff. That's all relatively new to me, but it's still, you know, my background is just writing cool guitar parts and trying to make a way to fit them together. It's just now there's this added challenge of like these should probably be songs rather than just like a string of ideas. So yeah, I don't know, it's kind of like a forever evolving thing, and I try and bear in mind that in the situation that I'm in now with Muttering, which is for the most part the only band I'm in, the hardcore band that I used to be in has kind of gotten back together. It's just you know, with the age we're all at now, like our singer just had a kid with his partner, and we've all got busy schedules, so it's just doing stuff when we can. But yeah, with Muttering, which is a lot more of a constant, you know, we chat constantly and have writing and rehearsals fairly regularly. It's just, yeah, I'm trying to write stuff. It tends to be me writing the initial ideas, and then understanding that when I present this to Chaz, the singer, that he will want to and need to structure things around the vocals. So a part that I will think, oh, this part will just go around twice. So it'll just be like 4 bars or 8 bars, whatever. Ends up being like, he's like, oh no, that's the best bit. That needs to be the verse. That needs to be the chorus. Or And I'll write a chorus, and I'll be like, okay, so this is a chorus. And he's like, no, that's not a chorus. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, no, it's just not. It's not. That's like a pre-chorus, and then we need to write another part.
And he's a bassist, hey?
He's the bass player.
Yeah.
I think to call him a bassist by trade or whatever is he's a bass player because he has to be one, not because he wants to be one. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's all the bass parts are kind of there to support the guitar. And I think if we had a different lineup with someone who was basically more adept at like playing more intricate bass parts, maybe the songwriting would change. But as it is, yeah, the bass is simple. The bass just kind of like weighs it keeps everything rooted and stuff, but it's not super intrinsic.
So you'll, whether it's a, is it a, is it normally a progression or a melody or something that'll sort of catch you and you'll sit down and flesh it out, or is, you know, do your ideas come from noodling? I guess a combination of all of those things.
A combination of all those things. Yeah, 100%. The way that I write stuff is just that I wonder if I can just swivel my video camera so you can see. I just have two guitars just permanently here.
A
And
nice
yeah,
little nylon there, hey?
it's just like a three-quarter size nylon.
Nice, yeah.
And then my favorite Telecaster, of the like four Telecasters I have. Yeah, they're just always here, and I just pick them up if I'm waiting for the kettle to boil. I'll just like darn needle. And I never pick it up expecting to come up with anything new that's good. But if I do, I just immediately pull my phone out and film myself playing it. And I've just got this bank of like hundreds of videos of me sat on this sofa, just right here, just like playing new ideas. Yeah. And I'll just revisit them. And sometimes like it's just a one guitar part, or sometimes it's like this, and then it naturally leads into this, and then this, and this.
Yeah.
This. Occasionally like a fully formed idea like pretty quickly, but I find that if I sit down and try and write, everything that I come up with is awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, when the pressure is there, I can't.
Sorry,
I can't do anything. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a little lapse there, but that's the best place to write from is in these little, I find as well, actually, is in these little pockets of time where your brain psychologically is not going, I'm going to write something really good now. You know, it's sort of, because accessing that sort of unconscious part of your brain is where the magic ultimately comes from. And I can be often just, I don't know, in the middle of doing something where I'm nowhere near a guitar you know, just when the brain's not engaged, you know. And something
really terrible story, because I can't remember who the artist was, but there's a painter who, like, famously realized that all his best work was when he was like really tired. So he would go to sleep, he would lay on his bed holding a spoon and have a plate underneath it, and then basically when he would like fall asleep, his hand would naturally let go of the spoon, it would clatter on the plate, and he'd wake up and he'd just jump and start painting. Because that's when you're, you know, it's in these weird, like, when you're like off guard or whatever, that's when you're most creative and your brain is just do whatever the hell it wants.
I try and sit down a little bit in the morning and sort of play and noodle, and then in the evenings as well, I sort of catch a few minutes here and there, but I find honestly those small 3 or 4 5 minute pockets of time can be so powerful, because even if it just like sparks something, you know, as you say, it can ultimately change the trajectory of how you think about something, or the trajectory of a song that you're currently working on. So yeah, I'm such a huge fan of those little pockets. So you'll sort of have a progression or an idea of a lead melody or something, and you'll send it off to Chaz, and he will sort of work with some things and then send back, and sort of it works that way.
Yeah, exactly that. I don't send everything right. In fact, I'll only occasionally send him something immediately.
Yeah.
I am in the not unique but like unusual position where staring at a DAW, so staring at Pro Tools on my computer, suddenly I'm at work. And if I'm at work, it feels less fun or engaging. So I'm not the kind of person to like write something and immediately think, oh, let me like figure out the tempo and then put this in Pro Tools. That's like the opposite of what I want to do, just because it doesn't feel as fun. It feels more like work.
Yeah.
And the thing that I really enjoy is just playing a guitar really loud through a great amp with someone there playing the drums. So I tend to just wait until we're all in one room and then present ideas and be like, here's approximately what I think the drums should be doing. Here's the part. Here's another part that it could go into. And here's another part that could do. Let's just play these parts all together.
Yeah.
I don't want to dictate, because I've been in bands where one person writes all of the music and it's not super fun. So I want them to have their say and not it just to be like the Tom show. But
sure.
And also I'm not one writing the lyrics, so there's been a handful of lyrics that I have written where I'll be like, here's a suggestion for what this could be. I'm not forcing it. So yeah, it's very much I just stockpile loads of ideas. I actually need to go through them all. We're planning on recording another album
nice. Next year,
and we have 0 songs written, fully written for it. And we're meant to be tracking the drums in January. Mm. So we've got about 3 months where we need to write about 10 songs. So
yeah.
It's going to be a bit of a, I don't want to say a slog, but like I have so many ideas. We just need to like whittle them down.
Yeah. I think it's such an important, if you've got a date in the diary, or you know you're going to be tracking drums in January, it helps, I think, to really have that sort of marker, because it doesn't just sort of leave things open-ended, you know, and sometimes people work a little bit better under pressure, and you've obviously got some nuggets on the phone that you need to work through. But yeah, I think having that, how important do you think it is to have that deadline where you sort of know that you've committed to some tracking in
Deadlines are like, I would say, the most important, not the most important, that's a lie. Deadlines are one of the most important part in the creative process because you can pick at something forever. I have one song, no, I have three songs. I have three songs sat on a hard drive where I've fully written the song. I've played all the drums. I'm not a freaking drummer. I'm not trying to show off. They're just very basic drums. I played the guitars. I've played the bass. But I'm a horrible singer. I'm really bad at singing. So I've got these songs sat on my hard drive where it's like, I think I want to do the vocals because then I've done everything and it's quite an egotistic thing. But I'm like, I've never done that before. It would be really cool if I were to see it through. But there's no deadline. No one even knows about these songs. I've played them to a couple of people ever. I know they're not going to get done because there's no deadline. I've also got an EP of music that I wrote and recorded probably about 6, 7 years ago. It's just like weird, heavy music that my friend Kurt played the drums on, and I did the bass and the guitars, and I'd fully written everything. You know, it's four songs. Everything's done apart from the vocals. I just never got around to writing or recording vocals for it because, frankly, I'm not a good enough singer, and I didn't know who was the right person to ask to do it. And they never got done. There's no deadline, so they just never got done. If there's a deadline, I will do everything I can to meet it. So if it's, you know, projects for other people, if someone's like, "Oh, actually, we really need that done by Friday," I'll be like, "Okay, well, I don't need to relax the next 3 evenings. I'll just get it done." But if there's no deadline, it's gonna be months.
I mean, I can speak about that a lot from personal experience. I mean, that sort of first week that you and I did, or you and me and Harry and Simon, I think that was November, so we're coming up to 12 months ago. You know, if that hadn't been in the diary, likewise with this live session that was re that we've recently done, if it hadn't been in the diary, you know, because in my mind, you know, I'm going, oh, I'm not really ready. Oh, I just want to give it a bit more time. Oh, I want to wait until I've done this before I've done that. But it just inevitably, that just opens the, you know.
Unless you are fortunate enough that you like only work a few hours a week or don't work or you know whatever, most people don't have loads of free time.
Yeah, it's true.
You're never gonna you're it's just you just need to do stuff. You just need to get it done. There's a couple of people that I know who are like the kind of people where they've been in bands before and they always think that their new band is the one where they'll like finally get loads of stuff done. I'm like, I would love it if that were the case, but the kind of people who procrastinate and don't have anyone there telling them to like hurry up are probably always going to procrastinate and not hurry up. It's really hard to be self-motivated when you're working for yourself. Like all the things I've done for my own bands, if there's a deadline, I'll get it done. Anything that's like just for myself and there's no one asking me to get it done, never getting done.
I mean, as you say, you're managing timelines with bands as a producer and as your sort of bread and butter, but you're also a songwriter and you're also managing your maturing project to an extent alongside the other guys. But as you've said, your stuff that you've done exclusively on your own, it's sort of still just sitting on the hard drive, and there's nothing and no one pushing you to finish it.
No.
And yeah, even with my stuff, you know, every now and again someone would go, come on, Kate, like what's going on? Or but ultimately, it's you're self-governed. You know, you've no one else is going to help you push stuff over the line. Yeah, how do you? I guess, as I said, from a band perspective, and the fact that it's your income as well as, you know, being a musician and sort of wanting to do it for love and for passion, how do you sort of manage the motivation around those two things? I guess from a work perspective, you've got to eat, right? So you've got to have X amount of artists coming through the door every month, and
The thing that changed when so yeah currently yeah I have the book house. You've been tons of times. The studio I worked at before that, I think I'm allowed to shit talk it because it doesn't exist anymore. Like basically they just paid really badly. You weren't an employee, you got paid as if you were self-employed, so they just transferred you cash They just transferred you money once a month and you just filled it in an hour sheet and said how much you'd done. Really dodgy. There was like obviously no pension, no sick pay, no nothing. But equally, if you worked with a client of the studios in another studio or outside of the realm of the studio, you would be like fired. You'd just never be given work again. And at the same time, they paid £9 an hour when I started working there. And
Wow,
then
man.
it went up to £12 an hour. And as far as I'm aware, even though that was 5 years ago and, cost of living, whatever, blah, 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 rent's gone up so much, inflation, whatever. All the people that worked there up until when it closed got paid £12 an hour for like running sessions. And it's like, how you're expect and bearing in mind the sessions are 8 hours. They're not doing like 12 hour sessions, they're mostly 8 hours. And you would have a hard time, certainly when I worked there, you would have a hard time convincing them to pay you for an extra hour for if you needed to get in early and set stuff up. And frankly, like you should always get there early and set stuff up. Like, and the other thing with that studio is it was so many different people worked there that no one ever left stuff in the same place. So you're like, okay, great. So you want to record this instrument? Oh, we need this specific lead. Yes, we have one. Where is it? I don't know. Yeah, it would be a nightmare. It was awful. And the things it had going for it was great. The actual studio was great. Like amazing library, a great Yamaha C3 grand piano. Good vintage drum kit, had a couple of like nice guitar amps, had some good microphones, had a great mixing desk, all this stuff going for it. But yeah, just like mismanaged and like dumb person who owned it. I won't name names, but yeah, he was absolute moron. When I worked there, because the money was so low, I just had to work as much as I could. Living in London being kind of the thing. But if I worked 10 days or whatever, that would be my rent covered and then, or, rent and bills and whatever. And then if I'm on top of that, oh,
You
now
had
I'm
like a
making
little formula.
yeah. And on top of that, you're like, now I'm making money. Since I started this studio, the Bookhouse, it's basically the same thing, but all of the costs involved have like doubled. So it's like suddenly I've got way more money coming out every month. So it's still the same situation where you're like, I still need to work however many days, like 8 to 10 days or whatever it is, to get enough money to pay everything and some tax and all the other stuff. But the difference is that now, when I work over that limit, I make twice as much money or whatever. It's still not much. It's still not like loads of money, because we position ourselves as this like affordable studio. I think if we invested more money in a few fancier things, we could probably get away with raising the prices. But it's just that the people that I cater towards are like independent artists who, and I'm busy, and I'd rather be busy working on stuff that I like than working less on stuff that I don't like. It's just, yeah, I've never been minded to maximize profit or whatever. But it does mean that you're kind of, yeah, you have this like, how much do I want to work, how much can I work, how much work do I have, like. And yeah, being self-employed, you've always got the thing at the back of your head where, like, why would I say no to anything when in 3 months I might have no work? And like, thankfully, that never really comes. Like, I always have quite a lot of work on. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
And then just amongst all of that, just finding the time to motivate yourself to keep on
To the creative stuff.
creating.
I think
Do
the
you
creative
sort
stuff, yeah.
of do you carve out specific pockets of time for that? I mean, I know you mentioned you've always got the guitar sort of at the ready. Do you have any other rituals that you sort of do you sit down and write every day, or do you practice every day even?
I mean, I don't really, I don't ever regimentally say I'm going to sit down to write now or I'm going to sit down to practice now. I just pick up the guitar and noodle it, like every time I get an opportunity, basically. Yeah, with work, it is kind of like I just do as much as I can, especially if it's fun projects. The way that I structure kind of band stuff is basically like around doing as much as I can. Like before the pandemic, both in bands that I was a part of and I would just fill in for like other bands, I did a bunch of tours. So like I've been, I've done quite a lot of European tours, been to loads of cool countries, met a lot of great people. And similarly, was always doing a couple of UK tours, not long, but like a week or whatever. I'd say like maybe like three tours a year, whether they be UK or European. And it was great. It was so good. And part of the motivation for me to do a band now is that I just want to do that again. It's significantly harder since Brexit to do European stuff. But as far as I'm aware, it's still pretty straightforward to just go out and do like a week of shows without getting in too much trouble for like tax stuff or whatever it is. So kind of a lot of that stuff that I'm working towards is just stuff that I want to do. I want to go and do a European tour. How am I going to do that? Well, I need to do a band and we need to have like a new thing and we need to like, it needs to be significantly bigger than the other one. We need to do X, Y, Z, like all this other stuff. I think I'm motivated by just wanting to do the fun stuff. Like I just enjoy playing gigs. So for example, like last week we played two gigs and I put on both the gigs just as a test to myself to see if I remove everyone else from the equation. Can I book the venues? Can I book the bands? Can I supply all the equipment? Can I get people to come? And the answer to all of those things was yes. And both of the shows were really good, but it was so much stress.
Graft.
A lot of work. It's a lot of work to lose money. Like both of them were like the first show, I won't go into it, but basically like you had to sell X amount of tickets before you start making any money. Mm-hmm. And I think we were like right on the cusp. So it's like, did we make any money from that show? No. The other show was, we just made it free entry because we were like, I'd rather have a great show where loads of people come than charge a tenner, like fewer people show up. So yeah, again, like with, we sold some t-shirts, but like with petrol and paying sound engineer and all sort of stuff, we like lost money on it. But it's like, I just enjoy that stuff. And most of the sitting down to write and all this stuff is kind of just geared towards, I want to do all these fun things that are only going to happen if I push to make them happen. And I enjoy writing the music. It's not that I don't enjoy it. And it's not that I wouldn't do it if the gigs weren't there. I would still do it. But part of the motivation is like pushing it towards getting out and doing fun stuff, honestly.
Yeah.
So finding time for it is just
you just do
I don't really know. I don't consciously think about it. I just kind of put these rehearsals in the diary for when we need them and put writing sessions in the diary for when we need them, and that's, you know, that's prioritized above social stuff or work sometimes, because it's finding the time that the other band people are free.
I guess you've sort of worked out ultimately what really makes you feel the most alive in terms of your music, and that's performing and sort of meeting different people through gigging and that live scene, which is cool. I mean, you obviously you wear loads of different hats, you know, the producer, the songwriter, the gig guy, you know, you can put a live show together, as you've said. So you've still managed to find the little pockets within all of the things that you do that make you feel the most enjoyment, I guess.
That's pretty much it. I think all of my life has been geared towards doing as little stuff that feels like work as possible. All of the recording projects I do are work, but I just try and make them not feel like work. That's why it's like I will clean the bathroom, but I will put it off endlessly until it But yeah, I'll get all the stuff that I enjoy done as quickly and as well as I can.
Cool. I think that's we've talked about so much. What I also did sort of want to ask you was, how important is like listening to new music for you, both as a producer and both as a songwriter as well? Do you find yourself listening to loads of stuff, or
I go through phases. Honestly, it's really depressing, but sometimes I just don't really want to listen to music.
I get that.
That being said, every now and then there are like new records that come out. Like a few years ago, I got really into, it was actually Harry and Simon got me into His Golden Messenger, like just Americana-y, not quite country, but yeah, just like Americana music. And like that was, I saw it live. It's not that they were like, here, try and listen to this on Spotify. They were like, oh, a friend of ours, we've got a spare ticket to this gig, like tonight or whatever. Do you want to come? And I'm like, yeah, why not? Went and was just like blown away. I was like, this is so good. Yeah, and every now and then I get introduced to something new that I've become obsessed with and like go super into. But I wouldn't say that I go out of my way to find new stuff very often. Every now and then I just do catch stuff that really catches me off guard. And I'm like, that is insane. Like literally yesterday, this recording engineer that I'm kind of friends with, this guy, Scott Evans, he plays in a really heavy band called Caroline Ward City. He's a recording engineer, and he tends to work on kind of like alternative heavy music. So it's not really like metal where you've got people like going headbang. It's not really like that. And nor is it like hardcore punk. It's kind of, just like other heavy musics. And there's like a new record that he worked on came out the other day, and I finally got around to listening to it yesterday. Yesterday I had a lot of like, I was just doing a lot of bits, so I just had music on in the flat for quite a lot of the day, and I ended up listening to that album 3 times.
Wow.
Through the course of the day. Once in the morning and then twice in the evening, and it's just so good. It's a band called Great Falls.
Great Falls.
I'll send you a link. I would be surprised if you liked it.
Okay.
I'd be pleasantly surprised if you liked it, but it's just really abrasive and horrible. Immaculately presented. It's like, it's incredible. Like the last song is like 12 minutes and a lot of it is just kind of like one riff, just like building. And yeah, every now and then I find new music. And that band has been together for 10 years. They're not a new band. It's just the other day. Yeah. Every now and then I find new stuff that like blows my mind. And I'm like, how has my life existed without this?
Yeah.
You know, I'll always check new music of my favorite bands out. It's like a band I'm obsessed with called Fiddlehead. They are, for lack of a better term, like a super group of some members of this old pop punk, post hardcore, whatever they are, probably pop punk band called Basement, and the singer of a hardcore band called Have Heart. And they're all kind of just a bit older and wiser, and like the music's more considered, and they're all like really good at their instruments.
Yeah.
Like the drummer is insane. And they're like one of my favorite bands, and I only heard of them in the last few years. And as soon as I heard them, I went to a gig again. Actually, I just got introduced to him because a friend of mine was like, I'm going to this gig that's around the corner from where you live. Do you want to come? I've got a spare ticket.
Yeah.
Sure. Just blew my mind. I was like, wow, I don't go out of my way to find new music, really. I think it would be cool if I did. I think I should. But to some extent, music is always tied to like work in my mind. Sometimes when I'm listening to new music, I'm thinking about the production, or like, rather than just enjoying it for what it is, I start
analyzing.
I don't know.
I very rarely I used to listen to music all the time, but now you will find me listening to a podcast more than I would a new record. But I do sort of try, and I've been trying to I've recently, I mean, I think lots of people know about her, but I just didn't, is Margaret Glaspie or Glapsy, or she's like Americana folky, who's really cool. Also Brandi Carlile, who I know has been on the scene for, you know, 9 Grammys worth of 7 albums. But other than that, like, massive tune, I can't think of what it's called now. I just haven't listened to any of her stuff, but her voice is just sublime, and yeah, she's just the real deal, man. I mean, she's incredible. But yeah, I think for me, learning a song, actually, a song that I enjoy, whether it's something from previous years of listening to music, or sort of something new that I've become obsessed with that I want to sort of play, I think that can often also inspire a new song or a new idea, or can sometimes breathe some inspiration into what I'm thinking about musically at that time. But yeah, I can talk about this stuff forever, and I'm sure we could go on, but we have been on for a while. I think the last thing I just wouldn't want to chat about is just the Bookhouse and how people can find you. And yeah, I think also one more thing, if anyone was thinking about recording something that they haven't sort of, they've not really had much experience in the studio, you know, they've got some songs, but they don't know sort of how to bring them to life. Like, what do you think is the most important things? What do you think are the most important things to nut out before you, if someone was coming to you now to say, I've got to record some songs, and you go, okay, before we look at the project, before we open the project, I want you to do X, Y, Z, before bringing them to me, just so that they're in a sort of palatable format that you can work with, you know, what do you say are the most important things to flesh out?
So it kind of depends in what way you mean. If it's in like a songwriting way, ultimately, make sure you're happy with it. But on a practical level, you'll be surprised at how many times, if it's a band of like 4 or 5 members or whatever, people come into the studio and you get stuff like, oh, I thought it was fret 5. No, it's fret 7 on that bit. And like, just making sure you're on it. Like, it doesn't happen all the time, and I won't name names, but there have been incidences where it's like all 3 people who are playing melodic instruments are doing something slightly different. And you're like, that doesn't not work, because, you know, there are no rights and wrongs in music.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's all subjective. It's, you know, whatever. But if you were keeping that to a more regular traditional fashion, you're playing different things and that sounds like crap. You need to just figure it out. There's always stuff like that, just pre-production, just like figuring stuff like that out. On a songwriting level, it's one of those philosophical things where it's like, what's the best approach here? Is the best approach here, what are you trying to do? Are you writing this music for yourself? Or are you writing it to be successful? Or are you writing it for children? Are you writing it for like
someone else
so that other people can learn music by, you know, what's the purpose? My advice as someone who has never pursued writing music in order to make money, has only ever pursued writing music that I want to write, is to do exactly that. Just write stuff that you think is good, and that's fine. Like there are people who write music in order to be successful, but most of the people that are successful with their music are the people that write music that is not necessarily accessible, but like that has that there is an audience there for it. And it's not that they're deliberately writing for that audience, it's just that the stuff that they naturally write already has an audience. So yeah, I think the only advice I would really have is just like, you know, learn your parts and don't, you know, it's way less stressful to spend the night before just practicing all your guitar parts than it is to start at the studio and be like, oh, I haven't played this in like 3 weeks.
Because
it's more stress and it's, you know, it's more work and ultimately will cost you more money if it takes you longer. But just be into it.
Be prepared.
just prepare in any way you can and just be happy with it. And also, depending on different projects and who's involved and different people's roles, like, be receptive to people's feedback. Like, what's a good example? I don't know. Say you've got a line in the chorus that just doesn't rhyme. And someone goes, oh, shouldn't that rhyme? If your answer is no, of course it shouldn't, then that's fine. But if, you know, if everything else is falling into a pattern, has a rhyming pattern, then there's one exception. Someone might be asking that because they're like, oh, is that a mistake? Have you overlooked it? Like, I think a lot of the time there's questions being asked in the studio are not criticisms. It's just people trying to get their head around things. Just be ready to think about stuff. Be like, oh yeah, maybe that would be better if it was different. But at the same time, if you're sure of stuff, just be sure of it. The two I say to people when you've reached these decisions that are hard to make, is the two options in the studio that work well are when you're very open-minded and that anything that's cool is fine, or if you're really specific and you're like, this is it. The middle ground where you're like, oh, I'm not sure, what do you think? Oh, I'm not sure, what do you think? That's where you're like, suddenly you've just like hit the brakes.
Black hole. Yeah.
Everything slows down. And this is something that, like, just put a pin in it and move on, come back to it. Yeah. If you try and like spend 3 hours making one small decision, it just sucks the energy out of the session. And you're like, just wasted so much time.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I've learned so much from the work that we've done together, and it's you only learn from this stuff by doing it. You know, I can already sort of check off a few things that I would do differently coming into the next set. But it's
also just understanding the hierarchy of the people that are in the room and whose opinion counts for the most. And different sessions are different. Like, if you've got, this is a hypothetical situation, but hypothetically, if you've got like a music producer who's got like Grammys under their belt, and then you've got someone who's like never written, this is their first song that they've written, but the demo on SoundCloud got millions of streams and suddenly they're now working together. Like, if I were the engineer for that, like, who should I be listening to? Should I be listening to the producer who's got the experience and stuff, or should I be listening to the person who came up with it? Like, it's important in these situations to like know who gets the final say. And if they both think that they get the final say, how do we, you know, mediate, or how do you go about that?
Usually
it's clear. Usually there's one person. It's like the guy I mentioned earlier, this guy Ollie Whale. His music's really straightforward and it's just me and him working on it. He isn't a good enough guitar player to do anything other than open chords.
So
all of his songs, and you know, that's not an insult, he wouldn't mind saying that's
sure.
He just writes G, C minor, D, whatever, in different orders and whatever, different structures, all this other stuff. and I will try and write other guitar parts, and I will be like, man, I've killed it on that lovely guitar part. And then often his first email back is like, yeah, mute that guitar and only have that come in right at the end, or just like, let's just take that part out. And I understand that he is going to listen to those songs. He is going to have his name on them for the rest of his life. Mm. And I, you know, will do a million other projects, and it's not going to keep me awake at night. So
no, yeah.
Do I think it's better with it? Yes. Do I think that that is irrelevant because he is the person who is, you know, not even that he's paying for it. That's not important really, but he's the person who's going to live with this recording forever. Yeah. I'll just do what he wants.
Studio environments can be magical but also explosive and also intense, and it can be a bit of a roller coaster, eh?
The only reason that bands ever break up is because people can't get on, and you know, relationships break up when people realize that they don't get on as well as they should. And it's unsurprising that when you get like five people in a room together all making music, that they're not all going to agree about everything all the time. Like, how could they? It's just whether it's, if it's a band, you need to find a way forward with that. And if it's one person's project, it's like, well, who knows best? Is it the person who wrote the song, or is it the producer, or is it, you just ask everyone's opinion and then do you roll a dice? Like, just decide, understanding in that setting, whose opinion counts for the most. In prepping for a session, just kind of like be confident on stuff, but at the same time be open-minded to not just shoot down other opinions before you've heard them. Usually talking stuff takes less time than it takes to talk about stuff.
That balance of planning and specificity versus being open-minded and easygoing, and it's an interesting part of things to sort of be stirred around in that sort of setting. But I think that sort of brings us to the end of not taking up too much of your time.
That's cool. I hope I haven't waffled too much. I hope everything makes sense and isn't just ramblings. But, you know, good questions. Super interesting stuff to think about, really.
I got obsessed with this sort of stuff. I've always been obsessed with it, and I guess a large part of my work as well is just listening to people's stories and talking about music. And I've been obsessed with this sort of stuff during lockdown, and thought, I'd love to have something like this of my own and sort of speaking to and working with people who I know, and just, you know, sharing ideas and thoughts and things about music is what I really dig to do. So thanks for being a part of that. I will, I think for anyone who wants to work with you, we'll make sure that they can find you through the show notes and things like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you work with pretty much anyone and everyone. I know that you can record, you know, orchestras and folk and Americana and rock and punk and
there's definitely genres of music that I know less about, and there are some genres of music that I don't enjoy, and I would be the wrong person for the project. And I, rather than take your money and then half-ass it, I would just say,
But
for the most part, I'm pretty open-minded with this stuff. I like a lot of stuff, and I kind of like the variety. I don't think I'd ever be the type of producer to just do death metal, you know. You get people who are super specialists. I don't think that's ever what I'll be.
Nice one, Tommy. We'll catch up at some point as well about our stuff, and thanks again, and we'll talk again soon. Nice one. Ciao.
Quickly. See you later.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. There is plenty, plenty, plenty more to come. So if you're new to the show, make sure you subscribe. You can find us in all the usual places, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, etc. On socials, at The Good Shiz ZZZ, as well as via our website, www.thegoodshiz.com. We'll see you next time.